Stephen.
Hello, Stephen.
Every time we do that, I think of there's a cartoon known as a comic strip called Pearls Before Swine. Have you seen this comic strip?
I think I have on the internet.
Yeah, it's very, very clever. Remember in the days when you checked the funnies in the newspaper for the comic strips and when it was actually something you checked? I remember as a kid religiously checking the newspapers, going to the cartoon pages. And when a new cartoon came or one got dropped, a new comic strip, it was like a big deal to me. And now I find my comic strips on the internet, like you did. But anyway, there's a crocodile character who lives next door to a zebra character. And the crocodile is really, really dumb. And every time I say, hello, Stephen, I think of the greeting the crocodile gives, which is, hello, zebra neighbor.
Okay, well.
It calls that to mind. So every time we do that, I think of Pearls Before Swine and make a mental note, I should check today's comic strip.
Well, I'm just pleased I ended up being the smart zebra in that story and not the crocodile.
I'm the dumb crocodile. Yeah.
I wasn't sure where that was going.
I wasn't going to put you in the croc position. Don't worry.
Yeah, well, that would be okay if you did. We've known each other long enough. And we've done the Hello, Stephen opening. It just happened sort of naturally like 6 or 7 years ago. Now we've been doing this podcast that long.
Yeah, we didn't go to somebody who suggested it would be a good branding.
We didn't focus group it.
Yeah, no, we just... The fact that both of us are named Stephen, it kind of flowed. All right. So speaking of flowing.
Big day today.
Yeah, the inauguration happened in the United States and did not live up to its billing, as far as I'm concerned, because it was dead quiet. The precautions that were taken obviously sent a chill through the Trump supporters. I think that they got their rocks off, so to speak, with what they did in the Capitol. And it seems now like they're a spent force. And I feel uncomfortable thinking or feeling that way because I don't want to underestimate them. But I think that being cut off of Parler and cut off of Twitter, reducing the ability, I mean, this is an old war tactic, reducing the ability of the enemy to communicate with itself. Is a victorious move. And I think that I don't know if we've seen the worst of it, at least for the next while, or not. What do you think?
Well, one would hope that we've passed sort of the crisis and it starts to sort of crumble and fall away. I mean, there's always going to be the true believers and the troublemakers. But like I say, we didn't, you couldn't do anything in Washington because, it was locked down tighter than a drum. And all the state capitals, I haven't seen any indication that there's been any major problems. There was a sad picture earlier today. Of one guy standing in front of the legislature with a flag, a big Trump flag, and going like, the quote was from him, I thought there would be thousands of people here, but you're pretty much on your own.
That was a very funny picture, by the way.
It sums up the end of an era.
It's one of those things that truly proves a picture's worth a thousand words. Because he's standing there, the state house is completely cordoned off with fencing, and he's just standing there alone. And
it's a long shot too. I mean, you can see that there's nobody in front of the building.
Yeah, it's way out. And that, like you say, it's emblematic of the end of an era that went out with a whimper, not a bang.
Yeah, and there was actually chatter on the few communication channels that are still on Reddit and some of the darker parts of the internet. There was reported chatter going on among the so-called diehard Trump supporters being really disappointed about today. As observers, they were saying like, well, where's the, not the literal fireworks, but the figurative fireworks, where's the protest? I thought today was the day we were going to take it all back. And Trump had something, something in his pocket that he was going to make sure that, they were all going to get arrested in a fell swoop. And the Supreme Court was going to set up a guillotine on the steps of Congress. And we were going to start, the revolution was going to happen. And they're all going like, well, wait a second, it didn't happen. What we were told, there was going to be a riot, and there just wasn't. It was a peaceful, almost kind of boring transfer of power.
Well, and I'll tell you that the walk that President Biden took along the street leading up to the White House, that 10 minutes or so of walking in the open. I was holding my breath the whole time.
Yeah, there are lots of times when he was up on the podium, and you know, they've got glass around, and they've got helicopters, they got snipers, and they're like they're a million miles away is the nearest civilian, unfortunately. The odds of something happening were they did their absolute best to make sure it was pretty much zero. I mean, they even got rid of a couple of National Guardsmen who had expressed sympathies with the rebels. They did a lot of vetting to make sure there wasn't any surprises. But I was still holding my breath too, because you just, things are crazy enough with that many armed Americans. And feelings being so high that you just go like, you're just waiting for something to happen. Thank God nothing did.
Yeah, but holding my breath made me realize just where we've been transported to, at least in terms of American politics. Thank goodness not here, but that I would actually be, and you as well, and I heard commentators from the news also indicating their apprehension while he was walking and breathing a sigh of relief when he finally made it into the White House, because
it's like he made it in. He's okay. Yeah, he's safe.
Yeah, he's safe. But the fact that we have to hold our breath and be worried that he was going to be assassinated or something was going to happen, an IED would go off or something. We've been transported to a new age of politics in the United States, and I don't know if there's any going back. We've got armed Americans who have been radicalized. Many of them are not joking. Many of them are nuts. They're delusional. They're violent. They've got grievances, and they've been told who to blame. And that's not going away. I wonder whether this is whether the days of the big open inauguration with large crowds, whether those are over. What do you think?
Well, I take the long view of these sorts of things. I mean, there was sort of like the golden age of assassinations, political assassinations. If you go back 100 and, you go back to, before the First World War. I mean, it's what caused the First World War. It was a political assassination. But political assassinations or attempts were shockingly common back then. People had grievances as well. Teddy Roosevelt, famously was shot while by somebody, I think it was at a whistle stop. And he continued to give the speech. He's bleeding out. I mean, and it wasn't just a flesh wound. They got him in the torso, I think. And he said, "No, I'm going to give my speech." And half an hour later, he finished his speech and then got some medical attention. But civic officials, national politicians, in Europe, in England, were being assassinated with alarming frequency in, the end of the 1800s, the beginning of the 1900s. And, we sort of came back from that for a while. I mean, Canada famously has only had a couple of political assassinations in our history. Darcy McGee and Pierre Laporte are the two that come to mind.
Oh, Pierre Laporte. It reminds me of, I forget which newspaper person said this, of Pierre Trudeau, but they said in Pierre Trudeau, we finally have a leader worthy of assassination.
Exactly. And in Canada, we can kind of take it a little lightheartedly because, we have a mostly unarmed population, thankfully. And, we just don't sort of go that way. So,
There was an attack on the Prime Minister's residence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Somebody with guns.
By that friendly sausage maker, as the media made it out.
That's right.
And, and you've got to take that stuff seriously. And Justin Trudeau is a tremendously disliked politician in certain quarters, and it's in the quarters that tend to be the ones who are also in favor of gun rights. I would not want to be his security detail, because I'm sure between social media and all the rest of the stuff, the threats come in fast and furious, and every once in a while you hear about them picking somebody up for issuing death threats. The political temperature has gone up in the last little while, in Canada as well as the United States. The difference is, of course, we are not a country that necessarily resorts to violence that easily or mobs, but it only takes one person who gets lucky or is dedicated or whatever else. So you always have to be on your guard. But it thankfully isn't part of our culture. And the more that Canadians define themselves as not Americans, because we love to define ourselves in contrast to the United States, I think that's one of the things that we're very proud to define ourselves with, that we are not a politically violent culture.
Yes. And I think the U.S.
As a general rule.
As a general rule. The last time there was a lot of assassinations high level in the United States was the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., assassination of Bobby Kennedy, of course, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But those were pulled off under suspicious auspices. We still really, really, I think, don't know the whole story behind those assassinations. There's an awful lot of questions out there, and I think someone somewhere has the answers, but I don't think we have all the answers. I think we have pieces of the answer. But there was a sense that that was being, well, they were feeding us the idea that it was being pulled off by a lone gunman, a crazed lone gunman, which became sort of an early meme. And that didn't make us afraid in a sense, because it wasn't anything organized. There wasn't strength in numbers. And thankfully, that calmed down. It went away. I mean, the assassination attempt on Reagan was, in fact, just a crazed loner. Yeah. But now we've got militias have been building in the United States for decades now. They are entrenched in some communities. Their ideology is entrenched. Many of them believe that there is a large race war coming. I think that's their wishful thinking. The U.S. has entered a very dangerous political phase where Joe Biden is going to need more security than any president up to this point. His security perimeter is going to have to be wider. They're going to have to be much more strenuous in vetting people who are able to be anywhere near him, because you just need one of that crowd to sic semper tyrannis, and there goes Joe Biden. There was those theories amongst the crazies that Joe Biden has dementia and is just a beard for Kamala Harris, and that he was going to be assassinated on Inauguration Day by people working for Kamala Harris, and that she would then become president and he wouldn't serve a day in office. And I often wonder what becomes of people. And I actually have people in my family who believe that, I'm sorry to say. I'm tempted to contact them and say, well, that didn't happen. Are you willing to question all of the other things that you had accepted as gospel?
Somehow that never works out that way.
No, it's like those doomsday cults where the leader says the world is going to end March 6, 1982. And then March 3rd, 1982 comes, and March 7th comes, and everybody's fine. And then they put another doomsday, and the world continues, and then another doomsday. They always forget.
I forgot to carry the three.
The cult stays together, even though the purpose of their getting together to prepare for the rapture, to prepare for the end of the world, didn't happen. And somehow that doesn't shake their faith. The fact that there was a lot of stuff on the message boards, as you were saying earlier, QAnon supporters and people of that ilk were truly surprised, aghast, horrified that today wasn't the day that Trump took power and cast all of his enemies into irons. They really believed that was coming and that he had something up his sleeve. And I think the fact that he sort of just took off quietly, with his tail between his legs, more or less, they worshipped him as a strong man. And it's like the leader of a pack of wild dogs. When you're the leader, but you show weakness, they turn on you. Yeah. And he now slinked away like a loser. So I wonder whether we haven't seen the peak of his powers. He'll continue to fulminate.
He'll snipe from the sidelines, I'm sure, because he likes to be in the public eye. He likes the publicity, the whole thing. You know, the whole presidency was basically a publicity stunt. He treated it like a reality TV show, and, you know, with big surprise endings and keeping people guessing and big showy things that, you know, that at end you know, at the end of the day, didn't really mean much of anything. But, you know, so I think he will continue to churn the pot as much as he can for the next little while. I was frankly surprised that he didn't pardon, you know, his kids and himself. I was predicting that he would do that because, you know, the writing was certainly on the wall that the Southern District of New York is really gunning. They hate the Trump family and are really after them on a whole slew of non-pardonable charges as well. But I would have thought that, you know, some of the, you know, some, you know, they're going to be very tied up in court, and I think very poor for the next little while, because, you know, they've inherited a whole bunch of problems. It's like pushing snow forward. You know, they didn't have these things because they had the cloak of immunity over the presidency during the last 4 years, but now that cloak is off, and without a pardon, I think Trump is, you know, he can play the martyr as much as he likes, but I think when stuff starts coming out in court about his shady business dealings and self-dealing and, you know, the multitude of infractions, big and small, that took place to line the pockets of him and his family during his 4 years of his presidency, I think, you know, that's going to keep him busy and take a lot of the shine off. He'll paint it as persecution, but I think, you know, when the evidence comes out, it's going to be pretty damning.
Well, I'm not surprised that he didn't pardon himself and his children, because implicit in a pardon is an admission of wrongdoing. And they would have had to admit that they did something wrong in order to be pardoned. And they, even if they somehow, somewhere in a vestigial portion of their brain believe that they have committed something wrong, they're not going to want to admit that to the public. So I'm not surprised there's no pardon. And also a pardon would be fundamentally useless against the Southern District of New York, because federal pardon only applies to federal crimes. It doesn't apply to state crimes. And so he'd still be just as vulnerable in the SDNY, and all he would do would be to have ignited another debate about whether it was possible for him to pardon himself. I get the feeling that the wind was out of his sails after the Capitol riots, when everybody turned on him. When I think we were all waiting throughout his presidency, wondering what is it going to take for this guy to have his allies finally say enough, to finally get some Republicans to break ranks and say enough. And what it took was a riot that desecrated the Capitol and left five people dead. That's what it took before they finally quit. I mean, Mitch McConnell has indicated he's open to voting in favor of impeachment in the trial in the Senate. We know that 10 congresspeople, 10 representatives voted for impeachment, 10 Republican representatives voted for impeachment in the House. We don't know how many Republican senators are willing to vote for conviction in the trial in the Senate, but Mitch McConnell gave a signal that, you know, and if he's giving a signal that he may vote that way, Mitch McConnell doesn't vote with the minority. Mitch McConnell doesn't vote unless he knows something's going to pass. He doesn't vote for it. And so he might whip some senators into turning, and some of those senators may finally be so glad to have that boot off their throat,
yeah,
that they'll respond with, in an attempt to salvage themselves, they'll respond with a conviction. But I think that when people finally turned on him, Trump finally got his aides got through to him and finally convinced him that he had taken it too far and he can't go any further, that he's on the brink of very, very serious charges. I think when he realized that he wasn't going to rally the people to the Capitol, they weren't going to overturn the vote, that the vote was going to happen to certify Joe Biden as the president. Once he realized that he was out of road, all of his court challenges, except for one minor one, were thrown out. There was no evidence whatsoever to support what he was saying. There were Republicans starting to say there was no evidence to what he was saying. So I think when he ran out of road, all the court challenges were exhausted. His hope that somehow in Congress they would reject the electors, that went out the window. He hoped that Mike Pence would do something. Mike Pence didn't, because he doesn't have any constitutional powers to do so. I think once he realized that he was done, he was that he'd run his race, I think that he became very sullen. And we could, I mean, he stopped really issuing any reports, or I'm sorry, any statements. And we'd hear reports that he was basically sulking around the White House, and he felt everyone had let him down. I think that he gave up. I think that was the thing that popped his balloon finally. Yeah.
It was, you know, it was like watching the last 15 minutes of the movie Downfall. It's, you know, where, you know, Hitler's going like, Fegelein, Fegelein, Fegelein. And he's realized that everyone has just sort of like gone off because they you know, the rat's leaving a sinking ship. And, you know, the surviving Republicans, you know, really had two things that they were worried about. You know, they were worried about the ongoing influence that Trump has as a person, as a potential leader. I mean, when he talks about a run in 2024, I don't think that'll ever happen. I don't think he'd like the job in the first place. I think he'd like the title, but I don't think he'd like the job. And he's going to be older and, you know, he might be wearing an orange jumpsuit. So I'm not quite sure, you know, whether they have to worry about him being, you know, the future president of the United States. But I think they do worry about the movement that he built underneath him and how many of their own supporters and how many of their own voters, especially in some of the incredibly conservative Republican states, how many of them still treasure the memory of Trump. And, you know, they don't want, you know, any of their sitting representatives to cross the legacy of Trump, you know, whatever that is, to be unfaithful and to turn their backs on the idea of Trump, because basically that means they have to admit to themselves that they followed a false idol, that they were duped, that it was, you know, 4 years of wasted, stupid policies, and that they were idiots for following him. So you can't call your voters idiots by repudiating everything that they elected you to implement. So I think, you know, a lot of the Republicans, you know, the 70, 71 who voted against ratifying the Electoral College vote, you know, they weren't worried about Trump at that point. They were worried about the Trump supporters in their own backyards. As they start to fade away, you know, politicians sometimes have very short memories. It's amazing now watching the inauguration ceremony, watching Mitch McConnell, watching some of the other people who were presenting gifts to the incoming president, to Biden, talking as if the last 4 years never even happened. You know, and that, you know, that's just a classic thing. It's like, it was all just a dream. It was one of those cheap sitcoms where, you know, the last 4 years were just actually a fever dream of somebody's. And aren't we glad that that's all behind us now? And let's just pretend it never happened. You know, I've got a better memory than that. And, you know, you've got to learn lessons from the past, but, you know, Mitch McConnell is there, you know, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He's praising Biden and talking about unity and like, oh, here's the flag I want to give you, you know, for the United States. And you know, it's like, you know, you were for 4 years, the biggest jerk on the Hill. You know, you killed legislation. You stuffed the courts with terrible appointments for judges. I mean, you did all these things to thwart Obama in his last 4 years, and, you know, and basically ran the shop while Trump was busy on Twitter and responsible. You know, the buck really did stop with Mitch McConnell for an awful lot of the stuff. But, you know, today it's as if the last 4 years didn't even happen.
Well, I thought it was interesting to see the turn that Mitch McConnell took. It was a couple of days ago when he said that Donald Trump provoked the riot and said that that people were fed lies by yep. Trump and other powerful people. You know, where was this Mitch McConnell when Trump was feeding lies all the way, you know, for the starting last on, 4
starting,
years?
Starting at the last inauguration, yeah.
Starting with the ride down with that escalator.
The nomination, yeah.
Yeah, he's been lying all this time, and McConnell didn't step in and say, no, these are lies. I am torn between thinking that he was actually affected by the people tearing into the chamber, and thinking that he just recognized that Trump was a spent force, and so now he could come out and speak like a true coward. like those people who resigned from Trump's cabinet, you know, in the last 7 days of his presidency.
On a matter of principle.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that McConnell did not like dealing with Trump. I know that he liked the fact that Trump, with all he was doing and all the bluster that he was drawing attention, he was drawing attention away from all the judicial appointments being made. Trump was a great smokescreen for what was going on behind the scenes, because that matter of those matters of judicial appointments are extremely significant in how laws are interpreted or laws are passed going forward. And having a Republican slant on it, it gives the Republicans a real iron grip on the judicial system. That's a frightening proposition. In addition to their majority on the Supreme Court, they now have so many judges in key places, in key courts, that I'm sure that Mitch McConnell appreciated that he could stack the judges the way he wanted, because Trump was drawing fire on any one of a number of some issues were absolutely picayune and silly. Others were of grave importance, but he was able to, under the cover of Trumpness, change the way the judicial system is shaped in the United States. So no surprise that when he was talking to President Biden and Vice President Harris, he had a big smile on his face, big congenial smile on his face. And like you said, he was talking like he hadn't just aided and abetted the worst presidency in the history of the United States, the most dangerous presidency in the history of the United States. Republicans really feel that the left are just historically so, they so want the Republicans to like them that if the Republicans offer a hand, they'll take the hand because they're just so happy that it's like people who go to sports events and they get shown on the Jumbotron. They get real excited because, look, I'm important. Look, they like me. They really like me, like Sally Field's Academy Award acceptance speech. The left has been like that for too long, just so interested in there being comedy between the parties that they will jump at anything that looks like it's going to give them what they want, and they get suckered every single time. It's like Charlie Brown in the Football with Lucy. Every time the left or the liberals in the United States take the Republicans at their word that they want unity and they want to reach across the aisle, they're always betrayed. They're always shown to have been dupes. And, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but, and, you know, you don't think that they're likely to be such dupes this time around. I hope they're not. I think that not so much Biden, but Harris has, you know, metaphorical balls of steel, being a prosecutor for so many years, she had to be, and she's got steel. She's a strong person, and I don't think she's going to forget what went on. Joe is so used to reaching across the aisle and trying for bipartisan support that he leans towards, let's just put this all in the past and let's move forward on for a bright future. But we will see how that plays out with the trial of Donald Trump in the Senate. And we'll see what Joe Biden's position on it is. He may not come out publicly, but it'll become very clear what the White House's position on the trial is. He so far has been supportive of it, said that it can go on at the same time that his nominees are being appointed, being, you know, sworn in. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how much the left wants unity and healing so badly. Are they willing to just say that was just a bad period and let's move forward? Or are they going to be wary and recognize that they're dealing with a fox in a hen house when they're dealing with Mitch McConnell and the Republicans?
Yeah, well, and I would hope, you know, someone pointed out that, you know, reconciliation, I mean, unity and peace and moving forward and all that kind of stuff, especially coming from the Republican side of the House. Someone pointed out that reconciliation, one of the prerequisites for that is acknowledgement of wrongdoing. I mean, you know, if you want to take someone's apology, you know, we've all seen those mealy apologies, you know, I'm sorry if anyone was offended, you know, someone has to take ownership of what they did and acknowledge that it was wrong. And I have not seen a single Republican say, you know what, this was wrong. I mean, Scaramucci is probably the only one who does, you know, he goes on regularly on CNN and talks about, you know, say like, I was wrong. You know, what I did, you know, who I enabled at the time, it was just wrong. Are you going to get from Mitch McConnell, you know, I was wrong to follow this person. I was wrong to do this bidding. I was wrong to put children in cages. I was wrong to stand by while all these other things were going on. Until Republicans admit and are sincere about saying, you know what, we've learned our lesson. This was wrong. You know what? I'm ashamed of what I did. It was a lapse in judgment and it's unforgivable. And I'm sorry. And I hope we can move forward. They just want to move forward. They want to skip that whole other first step. You know, anyone who's been in a long-term marriage or anything else, you know, a sincere apology is really the prerequisite for moving on if you've done something stupid or wrong. And there just isn't any of this. There's justifications. There's, you know, just ignoring it. There's, you know, pretend, you know, whistling through the graveyard. Until that happens, there won't be unity. There won't be reconciliation. And, you know, you've got to keep one eye on them at all times because they're going to do it again because they haven't admitted, you know, there's no consequences for having done what they did in the first place. So why wouldn't you do it again at the first chance that you get?
Well, let's hope that this is the last podcast where we need to make the spirit of Donald Trump anything that dominates a conversation for half an hour.
Mention the T word. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just hope that he does go away. The Senate trial is still upcoming, and there will be news. I'm certain that indictments will be handed down. But let's hope that this is the last time we really need to focus on Donald Trump as any kind of political force. And with that, we will bring this episode of Stephen and Stephen to a close. But of course, stay tuned later this week, where we talk about Canadian politics on another episode of Stephen and Stephen. We do two a week now, so stay tuned for that. Stephen, thank you very much for your contributions as always.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. This has been Stephen and Stephen on the Fun Network.